Welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news, and these days they certainly are. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. The terrorists who attacked the United States on September 11th spent an estimated $200,000 to kill more than 6,300 people and destroy real estate that it will take billions of dollars to replace. The United States is assembling a huge military force and putting together a coalition of many nations, friends and former adversaries, to root out the perpetrators and to punish them. We will talk about this today. We will also talk about yet one more event that had its roots in the Vietnam War days, now more than a quarter of a century behind us, and that was the death this week of Nguyen Van Thieu, the last president of South Vietnam. He died at the age of 76 in Foxborough, Massachusetts, where he had been living in exile from his homeland. With us are, in Washington, Tim Kennedy, defense and foreign affairs correspondent of Arab News, a daily newspaper in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and Stanley Karnow, once the dean of Vietnam correspondence for this country and a prize-winning author. In Islamabad, Pakistan, Zia Uddin, he is the resident editor of the newspaper Dawn. And here in Colombia, Olga Sharipova of Ashgabat, Turkmenistan. Olga is a Hubert Humphrey Fellow and a visitor at the Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to all of you. Let's start with Tim Kennedy. One of the big potential problems with this buildup is that the United States is involving countries that are politically perhaps unstable. Osama bin Laden has as one of his targets the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. How much aid is the Saudi kingdom giving the United States, and how dangerous, Tim, is this for Saudi Arabia?
Well, that's a good question, Stuart. And as readers, as your listeners have probably read, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld is currently in the region. He was in Saudi Arabia yesterday meeting with King Fahad. And in spite of Rumsfeld's public assurances that the Saudis will be lending all the support necessary to support any kind of military action in the region, the kingdom is privately a bit ambivalent about this issue. There is within the kingdom some concern about the presence of U.S. troops there. They've been pre-positioned in, since the Gulf War, and this is one of the sources of unhappiness and friction, and certainly what one of the issues that Osama bin Laden has made for himself as far as his own interests.
Yeah, the Secretary of Defense said yesterday that he is not asking for any basing rights in Saudi Arabia. Is that really so?
Well, no, that's not. I think that I think Saudi Arabia and what resources it has to offer as far as basing rights and other sorts of support will be critical to any kind of military action in the region. Those resources have been pre-positioned, and we have facilities that can maintain and refuel and rearm aircraft and ground troops. Within the region itself, Saudi Arabia is one of the primary sites where that kind of support will be required.
Zia Uddin, what about Pakistan? Is there a buildup of American facilities there?
So far, there has been no sign of that happening here, except that we have been hearing and we have been seeing photographs, television pictures of aircraft carriers moving towards the Indian Ocean.
What about the question of food aid, American food aid going into Afghanistan? Is that going through Pakistan, and is there a lot of it?
Yes, it has arrived, and it is going through Pakistan with the USA's marking on the bags. The trucks are moving into Afghanistan through the Pakistani borders, and they are continuing. But perhaps the trucks would have to stop in a matter of 3 to 4 weeks, because then the snows will start falling.
And is this purely a humanitarian thing, or is there a political purpose behind delivering all of this aid to the Afghanis?
It's purely humanitarian. The entire world has joined in. The UN Secretary General has for a collection of about $584 million, and everybody is chipping in. So this is an international effort.
Olga Sharipova, the United States also has an interest in trying to get perhaps basing rights or overflight rights or whatever in the former Central Asian republics of the Soviet Union, now independent countries. What are your feelings about how much aid the Central Asian republics are likely to give the United States?
When the attacks on America happened on September 11th, I was here and I experienced all the horror of the American people and shared with them of the attacks of the terrorists. And I knew that my country has condemned, the president of the country has condemned the attacks on America. And during the meeting with the chargé d'affaires of the United States of America, Eric Schulz, he expressed that Turkmenistan will render support for coalition of the anti-terrorist coalition.
Well, what does that mean? If the United States wants to establish air bases, or if it wants to put ground troops in Turkmenistan, that it would then move into Afghanistan. Turkmenistan has a very long border with Afghanistan. Would Turkmenistan permit that?
I'm not in a position to answer this question because I'm not a specialist. I'm a military specialist, and I'm just now in America and here, and I hope that, I believe that the leaders of Turkmenistan will take the right decision.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you do live in Turkmenistan and you are here in this country, but certainly you've been following this. What about Uzbekistan or Tajikistan? These are other former Soviet republics, independent countries now, that
yes.
are on the border with Afghanistan. How do you think they will react?
I think that they will render support to the United States of America too in combat of terrorism. But what kind of support, I don't know.
Yeah. Yesterday, Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, visited NATO headquarters in Brussels, and he all of a sudden became very accommodating to the idea of NATO expansion to the east. And he appears to have dropped Russia's objections to NATO expanding perhaps into the Baltic republics and perhaps even into the Ukraine. This is a big turnaround. Do you think that this turnaround is going to have any influence on the leaders of the Central Asian republics?
I don't know, but I think that Vladimir Putin, Russia has suffered a lot from terrorist attacks also, because the territory of Russia, there are plenty of casualties, but not of such big size as in America, but there are the explosions of houses, there some little attacks, and Russia suffers very much from terrorism too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stuart, I agree. I think the meeting yesterday in Brussels, when Vladimir Putin met at NATO headquarters, it was a significant shift in policy regarding the whole issue of the extension of former Soviet republics. I was in Lithuania over the wintertime and very much saw in evidence Russia's opposition among the people that I met in the Lithuanian government there in Vilnius, and then also in Kaliningrad as well, which during the wintertime became the focus of a lot of attention because it was learned there was a lot of nuclear weapons pre-positioned there, and this was up to now was something that the Russians had denied that there was any nuclear weapons there. On the 19th of September, there was also a significant meeting between Richard Armitage, Deputy Secretary of State, and he met with his counterpart in the Foreign Ministry, and this issue was also discussed. And also, there was much discussion at that meeting over the issue of cooperation. Right. In response to the attack. So there has been a significant shift in policy, and I think if there's any sort of positive outcome of these terrible events, I think that these steps towards normalization between Russia and the United States is an enlightening movement.
Right. Tim, if I may change the subject and go to Zia Uddin in Islamabad, let's talk a little bit about the military buildup and what is going to happen. Is it pretty clear that there is going to be military action against Afghanistan?
No, not yet very clear as far as military action like we saw in the Gulf War. Perhaps what is getting clearer here in Pakistan from our perspective is perhaps they are planning a covert action along with an attempt to bring about a change of, the Zahir Shah option. I mean, a meeting was held in Rome only about 2 days back where a special council was established of 120 people headed by Zahir Shah. And the talk here is perhaps Taliban will be squeezed out from the north as well as the Pakistani borders to get some kind of an within the party change or topple them and install a new government, a broad-based government in Afghanistan, along with a covert action to rather smoke out Osama bin Laden. That is what is the feeling here.
Yeah, Zia, there is a story in the papers in the United States today that the Taliban leadership is perhaps in disarray, that leaders are disappearing, that perhaps the Mullah Omar has left Kandahar and has gone into hiding, and that some of the Taliban leaders are sending their families to Pakistan. Can you confirm any of this?
Yeah, the last question, yes. The comment, yes. They have already started. They had already started sending their families to Pakistan very early in the day. By the 13th of September, they were sending their families into Pakistan. As far as the desire is concerned, well, I don't have a very first-hand information, but the leaders, the Afghan war, the original Afghan war Mujahideen leaders who were settled in Pakistan and who were totally inoperative, but who have a lot of influence inside Afghanistan even today, they have become very active now. So perhaps there is a move which is in the offing, in which the Taliban leadership, the Taliban group, is being subjected to some kind of an internal erosion.
Mm-hmm. Tim Kennedy, how do you feel about impending military action? Do your instincts tell you there will be such action or not?
Oh, there's no question there's going to be some military activity and some sort of response to the attacks of September 11th. The question is, well, what sort of response that's going to be, and if that's going to be, for want of a better phrase, mixed with other sorts of responses, whether they're economic or diplomatic. Clearly, there has been a buildup of a U.S. presence in the region, and there have been American troops deployed to some of the neighboring countries. There have been troops from the 10th Mountain Division in Fort Drum, New York, dispatched to Uzbekistan, and they are there in the role of what they call force protection, and that would be to protect any sort of operational troops that would be deployed there to be engaged in any kind of combat. And there also have been public stories in the press of the deployment of special operations troops. These are commandos, as they say, that have been parachuted in or brought in and are inserted in a covert manner for reconnaissance or purposes, possibly prepositioning to targets with laser designators for what they call smart bombs onto various targets that may be bombed by aircraft. So there is a presence there. There's no question there is going to be some kind of military action. When that military action will commence is something that's known by a handful of people here in Washington.
Do you take seriously the idea that Afghanistan is just such a difficult country to operate in, that the American forces are going to have trouble being effective?
Well, the special operations troops in particular have been trained to operate in any kind of weather or any kind of terrain situation, whether it's desert, mountain, jungle. So these troops are trained to operate in any kind of circumstance. It will be a challenge. The Russians certainly have had their experiences there, and it's been it was a miserable one. It was Afghanistan to the Russians was what Vietnam was to the United States, and there's many lessons that they learned there. And because of this, what appears to be a new relationship between the United States and Russia, very likely they'd be able to perhaps communicate some of those lessons to us in advance of any kind of military action.
Okay.
But Stewart, sorry.
Yes.
The Americans have the experience of the Afghan war also. They were very closely associated with the Afghan people during the Soviet troops occupation. See, they know the terrain. They have a lot of experience. They have a lot of information on how to negotiate Afghanistan. Plus, they have the information available by Pakistan. Pakistan has a lot of information, a lot of experience about Afghanistan.
Okay.
So, with these two kinds of this kind of a combination, a covert action would not be that difficult.
Zia,
it's not like Russians. Russians moved into Afghanistan without knowing anything about that country.
Right. Zia, I'm sorry, we do have to take a break. But before we go, I want to ask each of you, if I may, a yes or no question. The question is, will we get Osama bin Laden? Yes or no? Olga, you go first. Yes or no?
Will you get? I hope so, I believe.
Okay, and Zia?
Yes, because Pakistan, after seeing the evidence given to them, has said that he can be taken to a court of law in Dhaka.
Tim Kennedy.
Yes, I'm confident of that. It's my belief. It's sort of akin to a criminal who has killed a cop. I think that every resource the United States government and its allies has now been focused on this goal, and there's no question that he will be apprehended or brought to justice, or if he's in the path of harm's way, will succumb to that.
Okay, we have to take a break. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Global Journalist on KBIA. You can listen to this program again, make comments, or ask questions by going to www.globaljournalist.org or by calling us at 573-882-9641. Let's go now to the story of the death of Nguyen Van Thieu, the former president of Vietnam this week. 25 years after the Vietnam War ended, it turns out that President Thieu was living in the United States. Our guest today is Stanley Karnow to talk about that. Mr. Karnow, a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and newsman. Stanley, you knew President queue. Tell us what you can about his life in exile. I don't think that many people realized he was living in the United States.
Well, I didn't see him when he was living here. In fact, I didn't see him after he left Vietnam. He left just before the fall of Saigon in April of 1975, and then he went to England, and he had a nephew who was living in the United States, and so he came over here. And he lived very quietly. I think he was just completely trying to keep out of the limelight. He was defeated, and I think he was quite humiliated by the defeat. He was quite bitter about it because he felt that he'd been sold out by the United States, and I think to a certain extent that was a justifiable concern, a complaint of his. And so he lived very quietly. I was quite surprised that he was 78. I would have thought that he was younger. He always gave the impression of being somewhat younger.
Yeah.
He first came to power. There was a lot of scrambling for power in 1965. You have to go back a bit to understand this, to the overthrow of the previous president, or governments of Nodine Diem, mm-hmm. who was overthrown and assassinated with American complicity because it was felt that he was not pursuing and prosecuting the war dynamically enough. And then in the next year and a half or so, there was a lot of scrambling for power. There would be cabinets that would rise and fall. And in 65, a group of younger officers, Nguyen Cao Ky was one of them. He was a famous,
flamboyant Air Force man.
That's right, with a beautiful wife, and Thieu and others. And there's a lot of scrambling around, and Thieu came out on top. He was very clever. Of course, he was, from the American point of view, he was, as Lyndon Johnson might have said, well, he's the only guy we got out there, so everybody tried to put the best face they could on him, but he was not really a terribly effective leader. First of all, the worst of his offenses or weaknesses was his tendency to surround himself with relatives and cronies. You could explain that by saying that he was living in an atmosphere of constant plots and conspiracies, and he felt that he couldn't trust anybody except the people who were loyal to him. The problem with that was that you had a lot of incompetent people in his entourage. He appointed numbers of generals and other officers who were not competent at all, but basically because they were loyal to him. The other thing that the United States had a tough time with was that, the American position is we're there to preserve democracy, but it wasn't a very democratic regime. There was great pressure put on him to have an election, so he finally did, and opposition candidates of no consequence were dished up.
Yeah, Stanley, excuse me for interrupting, but would you say the Americans were there to preserve democracy or to prevent the spread of communism?
Well, the real reason was the United States. The basic reason why the United States was in Vietnam sounds absolutely idiotic, but it's the truth. We were there because we were there. I mean, once we got there, the feeling became we couldn't pull out because it would be a blow to our prestige. In 1967, John McNaughton, who was a deputy Secretary of Defense, made a list of reasons, and that was the top of the list. Of course, then everything else was added on, like we're there because if Vietnam falls,
the domino theory
meant that everything, the rest of the world, including Waikiki Beach, would go mm-hmm. communist. And then down at the bottom of the list was we're there to preserve democracy. That was all the window dressing for Vietnam. The basic thing, of course, is that the feeling was it would be a terrible blow to our prestige if we pulled out.
Yeah, Stanley, let me ask you, you say there was really no reason for Vietnam. That's basically what you're saying. Do you see any parallels between Vietnam and what's going on today in the buildup toward an intervention in Afghanistan?
Well, I think there's a much more justifiable case. I mean, the Vietnamese communists were not threatening the United States. I mean, they were far from it. There was absolutely not a single piece of evidence that there are any Vietnamese communist agents or whatnot in the United States. The only parallel, and it's not an exact one, it's far from exact, is the complexity of the military approach to this thing. First of all, Vietnam is a finite area. It's a definable country. I mean, here we're up against terrorists, or whatever you want to call them, all over the Middle East and then as far as Indonesia and the Philippines, where you have large numbers of Muslims, fundamentalists. The biggest problem in Vietnam was that you were up against an enemy that was prepared to take unlimited losses. And I have a fear that you're up against the same kind of enemy today. I mean, these people, from what we know about them, consider that dying in this holy war that they're conducting is going to take them to heaven. And so, defeating these people is going to be extremely difficult.
Stanley, just one last question on that matter. Earlier in the program, we had a Pakistani journalist who said the United States will do much better in Afghanistan because the United States understands Afghanistan and it has had a lot of people in Afghanistan during the long war with the Russians. Do you see any problems with that?
Well, all I can say is to use an Arabic phrase, inshallah, by the will of God. I hope he's right, but I'm not sure that we really understand very much about Afghanistan. But I don't know. Maybe there are Afghan experts. That's not a subject I can address. But what you really have in Afghanistan, which is daunting, is this just terrible terrain of mountains, and deserts, and caves, and God knows what the enemy can hide in.
Exactly. Stanley Karnow, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
This has been Global Journalist on KBIA. Our guests today have been Tim Kennedy and Stanley Karnow in Washington, Olga Sharapova here in Colombia, Olga is from Turkmenistan, in Islamabad, Pakistan, Zia Uddin, he is the editor of the newspaper Dawn. Our director is Mary Furness, our producer Tianbo Huang. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie. We'll be back next week.